Hello, everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host, Laura Romans, and I'm here with our producer, Elliot Bloom, to talk about some new releases in cinema right now. Today, we're discussing Nouvelle Vague, which is Richard Linklater's movie about the making of A Bout de Souffle, or Breathless, if you don't like seeing French titles, and it's in the style of A Bout de Souffle. We take a look at Lynn Ramsey's postpartum story, Die My Love, starring Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. And also we're going to take a look at the comedy Splitsville, which is a chaotic look at the ups and downs of opening up your marriage. At the end of that, stick around because we have an interview with the curator of Schmutz Cinema, an event right here at Lab 111, celebrating queer intimacy and pleasure in film.
Die My Love is about a young couple, Grace and Jackson, played by Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson, who move all the way to an old house in Montana in the middle of nowhere so they can do some work and she can write the next great American novel. The two have a baby and Grace slowly slips into madness with postpartum depression. She's isolated out in the sticks. She has a husband who ignores her needs and deprives her of sex and support and attention. And she's left alone to take care of the baby and a dog she didn't even want. Here's a clip.
I'm pissed on the floor, too. You should make better choices on who you bring home.
For fuck's sake, Grace.
Why are you mad at me?
Why didn't you just let him out, you wet?
He's not my problem.
Just put him on his leash. Take him out the back until he gets used to where he is.
Yeah, I'm not going to train your fucking dog.
Yeah, a baby.
No shit.
I can't. This place is a fucking hole.
And you moved us into it.
I am working. And when I come home, I'm the one cleaning everything up.
Oh, no. 3 days a week. Let me shower you in metals.
Shut up.
This is interesting. I would like to see if we can, again, guess what the other thought.
Yeah.
I think you probably like this more than I did.
Yeah. I think so. I don't know why you don't like this, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to know why.
Yeah, I like Lynn Ramsey. Yeah. I really do. And I like Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. And I think they are both incredible in this. So it wasn't like I hated this movie.
Yeah.
There was just something about this movie. And I don't know if you'll agree with me. Something about it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And it's the portrayal of a woman going insane. I am so sick and tired of this lady's going crazy, so she's slow dancing alone in the room with her arms flailing and a cigarette and maybe a glass of wine. And now she's walking through a field and now she's like crawling on all fours and now she's scratching the wallpaper and like
taking all of her clothes off
and like all that. I just felt like those things are so tired. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I don't have a baby. I've never had postpartum. I can't speak for the experience.
Yeah.
But I almost felt like there has to be a better way to do this that doesn't resort to those kind of like cliched, look at this woman unraveling things. That kind of pissed me off a little. I also think there's movies that do that better. I think sometime soon we'll probably be talking about If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. That's also a story about the insane hardships of motherhood. But yeah, I kind of felt like I couldn't get to her. Like we're unraveling, she's unraveling, but we don't know anything about her before she had a baby. Mm. I think even the fact that I just mentioned in the intro that she's going to write the next great American novel is mentioned so in passing somewhere in the first scene where the camera's not even on her. She's like walking through the house like, oh, this is where I'll write the next great American novel. Clearly this lady was a writer. She was ambitious. We don't get to see any of the before.
Yeah.
So I found it hard to relate to these bored people that decided to move into this house. He's an awful person. I don't know why they're together. Yeah. So like all of these things just made it hard for me to really put myself in her shoes and connect with the hardship she was going through.
Why do you think Lynn Ramsey made these decisions? Because I think she's probably quite conscious of playing into maybe these cliches, which I think you have a point here, but
yeah,
she's a very talented director.
Absolutely. So that's why I was a little
because it seemed, I guess more for me, I hated it while watching it, but right, I think that was also kind of the point of like, you're stuck in this fever dream. That's a nightmare that you feel she's very trapped within this life that she is. I think how it's filmed as well, it's like in this square box, but set within the countryside, or like,
yes, the middle claustrophobic and wide at the same time.
The reason why I ended up like, it just stuck with me, I think, of how affected and consumed she is. And I think, although you're right to point out these cliches that Lim Ramsey plays into, the one cliche she didn't play into for me is, and maybe because she's already explored that, we need to talk about Kevin, which explores the mother's relationship to her son and whether she hates her son or resents her son for having the child. But in this, there's no necessary for me a question of whether she loves her child or not, but more her relationship with Jackson falling apart and deteriorating, and how she's had to let go of a past self to embrace this new self as a mother, and all the things that she has had to give up or lose without her necessarily having a say in that. I felt that very powerful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the more I've sat with this film since watching it, it's just, it's had an effect on me that I was like, oh, actually, I really like how they've went about this.
I mean, there's definitely individual moments that I like, but also sometimes I find it hard to empathize with a relationship where, okay, so the reason they're together, I guess, is in the first scenes they show them having some like really animalistic sex, and then that goes away. But I also see like no redeeming qualities in this relationship. He like gets a dog. She says, I don't want a dog. And he's like, well, it's our dog now. And like, I guess that zoomed out could all be metaphorical. It's just kind of like the weaponized incompetence or, you know, the woman always feeling like she has to carry everything. Not always, by the way, there's relationships where that's definitely not the case. But yeah, I got what she was doing. And again, this may be also the mood that you bring into a movie, but it didn't pull me in. And I just found myself being kind of annoyed by both of these. So yeah, it didn't really resonate with me. And I think also because I just think there's better examples of it. And I think the fantasizing, she fantasizes a lot. She fantasizes about her hot neighbor played by Lakeith Stanfield, which who wouldn't if that's your neighbor? And then sometimes she sees a horse and it's like, wow, the horse represents her freedom probably. And like, so to me, that was a little bit like, yeah, I get it. It just didn't hit me. And maybe because very early on, she does that dancing thing and that's just a thing that grinds my gears. So then I think the movie just already antagonized itself to me in the very beginning. So yeah. I think it was hard to win me back after that.
Yeah, I was less into the poetic nature of it, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But I think Lim Ramsey has made other films that lean more into this abstract poetry, lyricism kind of vibe. So I was a bit happy that it wasn't so strong or heavy this time. But maybe the annoying thing is, even though it's kind of the point, you don't know what's true and what's not the whole time. So the fact that Grace keeps finding condoms in the glove box of Jackson's car, and we're supposed to heavily insinuate that he's cheating quite regularly. And for me, yeah, I would think immediately this is just not a healthy relationship. What they seem like in quite a toxic, self-destructive partnership together, but because you don't know whether it's true or not, because
it could be her unraveling and seeing things that aren't there.
But I don't know about you, but I also weirdly got strong Twilight vibes from this film.
Oh my god, it's the YA reunion of a lifetime. It's Hunger Games and Twilight together.
I felt like the sequel to Edward Cullen of what he's like as a father with a baby, because they're raising the kid.
You imprinted on my baby.
Because they were raising the kid in the forest and how they'd shoot all the forest scenes.
I hadn't even put that together. Wow, it's Robert Pattinson in a foresty environment. Right. What I do love about Robert Pattinson and Jennifer Lawrence being in a movie together is it makes for an amazing press tour.
Yeah.
Those two are such silly geese, the both of them. And the other day I was watching the, Variety, like, lie detector test. They're great. And apparently Jennifer Lawrence also initially auditioned for Twilight.
Really?
And then she's also a producer on this movie, I believe. And Robert Pattinson was their first choice, and he said yes.
Because Martin Scorsese, I believe, bought the rights to the book and gave it to Jennifer Lawrence's production company, and she sought out Lim Ramsey to direct.
Imagine Scorsese calling you up and being like, hey girl, I think this should be you.
Yeah,
because Die My Love is a novel by Arianna Horwich. Another thing I thought was funny about this movie is that everywhere it's listed as a black comedy.
Really?
black comedy drama, and I did not really feel
that
sells. Yeah. So in the end, even though there were very many parts about it that I didn't like, I'd still say go see it. Not like, I hated this with a passion, don't go see it. But yeah, if you're expecting a black comedy, it's definitely not that.
Just with this press tour that they're on of Robert Pattinson, J-Lo, I forget how much she's been around and how much Jennifer Lawrence has done. And she's still, I think, only like 35 or something. It's like insane how much she's achieved. And I think...
By the way, biggest news ever, and by the time this podcast comes out, it will be old news, but did you hear that her and Emma Stone are making a Miss Piggy movie?
No, really?
Yeah.
Really, I can see her playing Miss Piggy.
Someone sends me, it's like, I felt like I was being pranked. I was like, this is my dream, and I've already bought my ticket.
They're going to star in it or produce
yes.
it.
So Jennifer Lawrence producing, and then I think she got Emma Stone on board to star, and then she's like, yeah, maybe I'll also star, but it's gonna be a movie. And this is not, she's like, we're not sure that this is gonna be the premise, but we were thinking about, like, so many artists are getting canceled, and wouldn't it be funny if Miss Piggy got canceled? That would be hilarious. So yeah, that's coming up in a few years. I cannot wait, because I think Disney is heavily underusing the Muppet.
Yeah,
I can't believe they just have that IP and are just letting it rot. Splitsville is a new comedy by Kyle Marvin and Michelangelo Covino, the duo that also did The Climb. They wrote it together, they take on the two lead roles, and their hot girlfriends are played by Dakota Johnson and Ariana Arjona. It's a story about friendship and open marriages and how those things can get complicated really quick. At the beginning of the movie, Carrie and Ashley, played by Kyle Marvin and Adria Arjona, break up on their way to Carrie's best friend and his wife. And when he gets there, they start talking about the secret to their happy relationship, and they share that they have an open marriage and how well that's working for them. Or is it? Here's a clip.
We are not monogamous. He can do what he wants, and I don't want to know about it. Unless I do want to know about it, in which case I would ask, and he would tell me everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like we're dating other people. It's not polyamory. We're not reinventing the wheel. I don't have another family with, like, another fish tank.
This is blowing my mind.
We're just realistic, you know? We love each other, and that love is physical and emotional and spiritual, and the emotional and the spiritual are more important. So we're a little bit more flexible with the physical.
You're very flexible with the physical.
What did you think about this?
I hated this.
Oh,
no.
Hate it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I'm sorry.
I really liked it. I saw it at the premiere at Leiden Film Festival. Big packed room. Yeah. What situation? Like, what kind of screening did you see it in? Was it?
I just watched it at home.
Oh, you watched it at home.
Yeah.
Okay. I think a big difference, and I think this is something we talked about when we talked about Naked Gun. I miss dumb comedies.
Yeah.
In theaters.
Yeah.
I love it. I miss it. It's something that I realize, like, I miss seeing something like Step Brothers in a room full of people. I really enjoyed this. I think some of the jokes don't work for me, especially the ones where it's just like, ha, look, it's funny because it's a man's penis.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, haha, yeah. You know. But I just thought some of the jokes were really great. I think their dynamic worked really well. You can tell that they're the people who wrote this story. Of course, I'm not always a huge fan of Dakota Johnson's acting.
I think this is the perfect film for her.
Is this the perfect film for it? But in the end, I did think the role worked for her. Mm. But what did you not like about it?
It just felt like white people problems the whole time. And it felt, I don't know, they weren't, nothing added up. This guy has like a complete weird overreaction. Not overreaction, but his wife wants to break up with him. That first opening sequence as well is just, oh, just utter stupidity. Like, you feel all the beats happening and you see where it's leading to. And then he runs away, basically, and just not willing to talk about it. And then within a day, he's already sleeping with someone, his best friend's wife, as if he's completely unaffected by it. It just, none of it really made sense. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know what it's trying to say about open marriages and monogamy and polyamorous relationships, because I think it's an interesting subject worth discussing, but like how they do it is just more like, oh, these four people all on destructive paths, not able to talk about their feelings or take accountability for their actions. And so they're going to just completely self-implode in such a big way. And then they come back together and everything's fine in the end.
I don't necessarily think it's saying anything really deep about whether or not open relationships are good. I think if it lands on the side of like, don't even try because it's going to ruin everything, which I think would happen if I tried that. But also everyone is allowed to live their own lives and do their relationships the way they want to. But I don't know. I do think when Carrie in the beginning gets broken up with, and then he like tries to fix it because he's like, oh, apparently this works for my friend, so maybe we can get back together and just have an open relationship.
Yeah.
And then that leads to like a whole array of characters being around the house, and it becomes kind of like a mishmash of people around the dinner table. I don't know. I thought all of those bits were quite fun. And then I think one of the comedy highlights for me of this year was Nicholas Braun, who we know is from Succession, appearing for like a scene stealing cameo.
I love that part,
which was probably my biggest laugh of the year in cinema, was one of the jokes that he does, which I won't spoil. I think it worked. I think for me the beats hit, and yeah, some of them you see coming. And it's, again, I don't want to do a movie podcast and be like, well, it's not Citizen Kane, but what do you expect? But it's kind of like, yeah, for me it worked, and maybe I'm biased because I did the Q&A, and they're really, really nice guys, and I really understood their sense of humor.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see how it would not work.
Yeah, well, I saw like in their press junkets that they were like referring to physical comedy a lot, and how Step Brothers and School of Rock, and even they mentioned some Charlie Chaplin were sort of their references or inspiration, but I just didn't get any of that vibe.
Are you a fan of those movies?
Yeah. I love Step Brothers. I think it's very funny.
Mm-hmm. I think the reason why it might not work for you is because Step Brothers is like all the way silly, and it's like so caricatured that it becomes this. So I think Step Brothers really, really works. And where I could see that this might not work for you is they are trying to do real emotional beats and trying to get you to relate, but then also trying to do the exploding fish tank and being thrown through a window. So maybe that is a disconnect for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, because with Naked Gun as well, I love it because it does
all the way goofy.
Yeah, it does not take itself seriously, and I'm all for it. And the film just feels like you've just filled the tension between it trying to do one thing, but also trying to do the other at the same time. And that fight scene, really, I hated it. Because it just felt like two guys that wanted their whole lives have dreamed of doing WWE and now get their chance to do it, that they're just going to go as big as possible as they can. And it, again, not making any sense, which, again, is fine, but lean into one or the other. That's take the handbrake off would be my advice.
I thought it was fun. But yeah, you make your own mind up. It's screening now. Nouvelle Vague is Richard Linklater's love letter to the making of Jean-Luc Godard's A Bout de Souffle, but it's in the style of A Bout de Souffle, or Breathless for those uncomfortable with French titles, as I am, because you might not know, but I had to try that sentence two times. It was a key movie in the Nouvelle Vague movement of the late 50s and 60s, which revolutionized filmmaking. Godard wanted small budgets, little planning, often writing what was going to be filmed at the start of the day. Here's a clip, but it's in foreign, so we'll keep it brief.
Celui qui est au milieu, c'est Truffaut. À sa gauche, dans son Chabrol. Et celui avec les lunettes noires, c'est Jean-Luc Godard.
Do you want to guess what I thought? I guess it's complicated. I find it hard to describe what I thought of this because I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, I liked it.
So, if you would.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I think Jean-Luc Godard is annoying. I'm sorry. I think he did a lot for cinema, and I think he did that kind of like the same thing we talked about with Dogma. Is like, I think there's such a purpose to what he does.
Yeah.
I just think that guy's hella annoying, and I don't really like his movie.
Yeah.
But I do see a lot of the value in it. And then this movie for me, I enjoyed watching it. I don't really see how it documents anything new or if there's any like real narrative or point to the movie apart from like, you know what it felt like? It felt like, I love listening to podcasts about movies. It kind of felt like that.
Yeah.
So I didn't like it. I just didn't think it was amazing.
Yeah. I think, not that I would encourage more TV series to be made, but I think I would have preferred this as a TV series where each Nouvelle Vague director gets their own standalone episode and you get to see how they made. At the beginning, I really didn't like it because, again, it felt very like showy of, oh, let me show off how much.
Wink, wink. Yeah. Do you see what we're doing here? Yeah. We're cosplaying. And it's like, yeah.
All these like just tiny details that I found out about Jean-Luc Godard and the French New Wave and the other stuff. But then as you get into it, I really liked it because you see how they make what is now classic and absolute, considered one of the greatest films of all time. And more because of how it changed cinema and mainly because of, for instance, jump cuts and how it really played with the narrative structure and all this stuff. But the sort of glamour of all of that and how like intellectual that might sound. And then you see that making it day by day, not only the struggle of it, but also sort of the whimsical nature of which they're going to make it. And not that, even though Jean-Luc Godard is this very abstract, deep intellectual thinker, still how day to day they just see what they feel like making and then how the film gets remade again and again. I think Truffaut in the film says how a film is made 5 times even, not just 3 times. And you feel that a bit more of him, Jean-Luc Godard, always searching for a meeting or for a way to just push it back against everything he knows about cinema. Yeah, so I can imagine filmmakers find that quite inspiring or just really fun to see that play out. But yeah, as if I don't know why it was a film in some respects, because it didn't really feel so much of a film, but more like a Netflix TV series, which I would have been fine with. Probably Jean-Luc Godard wouldn't, but...
Yeah, because they also kind of set up that kind of multiverse things, like all the characters... By the way, can I just say the casting is incredible? Yeah. I was almost a bit bummed that Zoe Deutsch was in it because you know her face.
Yeah.
And all the others were just kind of unknown actors, but they were just cast so well. Like Jean-Luc Godard looks so much like Godard. Agnès Varda looks so much like Agnès Varda. Like, who are these people? Where'd you find them?
Yeah.
Where it almost kind of took me out of it that Zoe Deutsch was in it because that kind of is the only thing tying it to it being made in this time, where I feel like if they also would have cast an unknown actress for her, it would have felt like watching a documentary and actually being in the room. And I thought that was really well done. But yeah, again, I would have loved to see all the other things. And I think Linklater, if you're listening and if you've got time, I don't know if you've got time, but like this would be an amazing TV show.
Yeah, it would. It would. Because also I don't think it does the whole movement justice to base it around Jean-Luc Godard, because they were all very influential. And I think the thing that people forget is also how different each of their styles and approaches to filmmaking were. It wasn't like they all followed. Dogma is a bit more, you see the same style repeated and they follow this clear manifesto, whereas they all have their own ideas and they take that.
Nouvelle Vague kind of gets clumped together
as
one thing, but
but it's also, I find it quite funny how they also kept referring themselves to the wave and wanting to be a part of the wave as if they were
alone. It was really interesting because usually that's like in hindsight like, oh, turns out that was a movement. I also thought that was interesting.
Could you explain a little bit about how it's filmed in the same way as Abu Dhusuf, because I didn't quite see it? But
it's filmed in black and white. It's filmed in the same kind of dimensions.
Yeah.
It does that thing.
They use the same camera, I think, as well.
They use the same camera. It does the thing with the little titles.
Yeah.
It does the thing. So it's kind of like those things.
And they're more subtle. I feel more like I didn't see any jump cuts first.
Right. And like the ADR.
Or paint for blood.
Exactly. It's not all the way, but you can, it's not like current, so it's definitely like a love letter to how he would make movies. And you see the little cigarette burns of when the film changes and stuff, so in that regard it's definitely looking to Nouvelle Vague. I think the most obvious thing is when a new character appears on screen, they like look at the camera and have a little title of who they are. So I did enjoy it. I thought it was like the smiley face emoji. That was nice, but not like I'm going to tell everyone I know that they have to go see this.
I would say people should go watch it, especially if they're going to watch Abu Dhusuf.
I was discussing with my partner if it was better to watch, which one is better to watch first.
Good question.
Yeah.
Maybe if you have never seen Abu Dhusuf, Abu Dhusuf.
Soufflés are famously very hard to make, is what Fake Off is telling me.
Abu Dhusuf, then I would watch maybe Nouvelle Vague first, so you get an appreciation and sort of the foundations of why this film is so It's revered because it's easy perhaps now to not quite picture or appreciate why this film had the impact that it did. And I think Nouvelle Vague does a good way of telling you how or why.
Yeah. And it's fun to be aware of kind of like what was going on behind the scenes, because Jean Seberg, who was this American actress, she was clearly getting very annoyed with Godard.
Yeah.
Because she's like, well, who's running this film set? Yeah. Like, I'm showing up and we don't even know what we're going to shoot today. Yeah. And he's just deciding on the fly. And I think that's really fun, like behind the scenes info to have. If you haven't watched A Buddha Souffle before, I think that's a very fun context. Did you know, by the way, that Zoe Deutsch is a Nepo baby?
No, but it doesn't surprise me. Is it? Because I know Dakota Johnson is a Nepo baby.
Yeah, sure.
I get them confused.
I understand. Yeah, so Zoe Deutsch is the daughter of Leah Thompson and Howard Deutsch, who did like Pretty in Pink and a whole bunch of those like comedies, 80s and 90s comedies. So she is the daughter of a director. I think she did a good job. I really think she did a good job. It's the only thing connecting it to this time. And I'm like, man.
Yeah.
If you like what you heard, you can get tickets for all of those movies that are screening right here at Lab 111 at lab111.nl. And now we're going to be talking to Maxi Meisner, the founder of Schmutz Cinema, which is an erotic film night right here at Lab 111, with a Schmutz Cinema XL edition coming up on December 6th. Maxi, thanks for meeting us today. I want to know everything about Schmutz Cinema, because I haven't had the honor, even though I'm here all the time, to go to one of your nights. What is Schmutz Cinema?
And this is the 10th edition already.
Oh my God, what am I even doing?
Schmutz Cinema is a queer erotic film night. Mm-hmm. I started it here. I had some iterations at festivals and other cinemas, but this is by far my favorite location, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's a queer erotic film night.
Okay, so what does that look like? Because I have a hard time imagining an erotic film night. Like, what's the vibe? Like, what is it? And why, especially?
To make it very specific, I select 6 to 7 short films. They range between 1 to 15 minutes. So I really try to keep them short. So it's like snap, snap, snap changes. And there's one performance in the middle to like lighten it up, because I think there's only so much porn you want to watch in a row, my opinion. And why is it started quite personal, because I was stuck in a loop on Pornhub. And started a podcast about it actually ages ago. And through that podcast, I discovered a whole world of alternative pornography. It's all very, it's very niche, it's worldwide. And it opened my eyes and kind of like blew my mind. I'm a film fan and there's so much creativity that I really felt needed to be shared.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good why. I think that's a really good reason. I still can't really picture what that's like. So you're saying, you're also calling it porn. I feel like erotic cinema sounds very like, but like porn sounds a lot more brash. But what, is that the same thing to you, porn and erotic cinema?
No, I do call it generally art house erotica. Mm-hmm. That is because of Instagram bands, etc. So it has a very practical reason.
I hope you don't call it segs, as most people.
I try not to. Yeah. I don't like it.
You gotta.
So there are always genitals involved in one way or another. It's not always penetration. It will look very different to what people are used to on Pornhub, let's say, or like free content.
Yeah.
But yeah, it varies very much. So some will feel very soft and just creative. Some will be very gentle. There'll always be a shocker in there where you'll be like, I don't know if I wanted to see this, but it'll be quick.
Why do you think it's important to have like a communal experience in watching art house erotica?
So one thing I couldn't anticipate is what the vibe would be at these events, because at first I was a bit paranoid, be like, oh, you know, do I need to mention that it's a pants on event, you know, because no one would get handsy or whatever. Really not a thing at all, it turns out. There's a lot of film fans coming, people that are just generally excited about erotic content or exploring that universe or exploring kinks or more with their mind, obviously.
Because when I think of like erotic cinema, I mean, I've lived in Amsterdam most of my life. I think of Casa Rosso and I think of like the cinemas where everyone's jerking off. That's not just for everyone who's interested in coming. That's not what we're doing here. How do you manage to curate that vibe, or does that just happen?
I think it's the mix of films. Like I said, I try to find, like, strike a good balance between soft and hard and kinky, different bodies, different sexual preferences. There's also always something funny in there. And for me, it opens up people's minds in what is possible, but also might tickle something that you didn't know was there. Yeah. And what I experienced here at Lab is that, especially the conversations after in the bar, are very lively, and people walk up to me and tell me about their favorites. And, you know, I don't know, feeling something about homoerotic art that they saw that they didn't feel before.
Why would someone who normally doesn't go see porn at a theater come to this night?
Because you're curious. Mm-hmm. Because you want to break out of your Pornhub bubble. Mm-hmm. Because you want to tickle your erotic mind. Because you want to, I don't know, meet people that are also curious. Also really think, like, to me, pleasure is an important part of our lives that we don't pay enough attention to in our daily lives, because we work and we live lives. We have chores to do and stuff. Mm-hmm. But this event is really geared at people exploring the pleasures in life,
right,
things that make them feel good.
Yeah, and you're actually, like, taking time to sit down and engage with eroticism, where I'm not going to say if this speaks to personal experience, but, like, very often if you do go to Pornhub, it's like, well, let's, okay. And then, like, 5 minutes later, you're in a dip, you're closing the tabs to make sure. So, yes, also maybe to kind of, like, take it out of that bubble. Well, that's really interesting. I can't wait to go. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
I think specifically for what is coming up now, the 10th edition is Schmutzig Sau. So this is something I haven't tried before either. It is, I'm not just programming one short film compilation, but I'm programming 6 different programs. We're also going to show 2 documentaries that are specifically about porn filmmakers and their journey and what it meant to whatever their communities. I'm also going to show 2 feature films. And then there's 2 short film programs. There's also porn karaoke where you can moan.
Oh my God, what does that look like? Tell me everything.
I was watching porn recently that my eyes were bleeding. It's a lot, especially for this karaoke program, because I'm creating it. So I don't know what exactly it's going to be yet.
I was
going
to say, you need to tell me more, because I love a bit of karaoke. But you're telling me it's going to be porn karaoke and you're going to moan, you're going to do, like, Foley for...
Not the Foley bit, but the moaning bit.
Okay.
Because the Foley is going to be hard to do. I think, you know,
unless you get a pot of macaroni involved or something.
I mean, you can do some slapping sense. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see how people react. It's the first time I'm trying that.
Fun.
There'll be an erotic poetry slam and also a finger and a hand job workshop. Oh. Or more of a demo.
Okay.
Hands on. There'll be a demo.
Good. Oh, and when's that?
December 6th. Saturday, December 6th, starting at the first screening is at 6:45 p.m.
Okay. Mark your calendars.
Stay connected with us at Celebrating Cinema and Lab by following at Lab111 on Instagram and Letterboxd. If you love what we do, support us by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us climb the ranks of the podcast charts. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmertzall and artwork from Studio FFF.